Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming Careers Podcast, a weekly live stream that we do every single week here on YouTube, discussing all of the updates in the live streaming industry, new product releases, what's happening with streamers and different platforms. And we've got a pretty busy show for you. We obviously missed last week because it was Valentine's Day, and you know, both of us have partners to entertain, let's say. but quite a lot to go through this week. We've got Facebook and its weird way of counting video stats, which probably explains some of the reasoning behind why we've seen so much growth on the Facebook side of things. We've got some large streamer platform news, both in terms of streamers re-signing with platforms, moving to platforms, and then also coming back to Twitch. And some interesting data actually from Stream Hatchet about people that have moved from one platform to the other. We've got some new streaming gear to discuss. Elgato and DT have both released some new products that we'll be discussing this week, and then a whole handful of Twitch platform updates, as well as the YouTube platform updates that this whole stream title and thumbnail is all about. Really excited to discuss some of those. But before we get into all of that, let's talk to our co-host and check how he is. Ben, did you have a good Valentine's Day last week?
Yeah, it was good. We my wife and I went away for a weekend, which is pretty cool to get away for a bit. And then actually today is a holiday for some people in the US. It's President's Day, and I'm fortunate enough to have off. So excited to be here and had plenty of prep time at the podcast today, Pete. So I'm excited. Did you have a good Valentine's Day as well with your significant other?
Yeah, I mean, we don't really celebrate. If she listens to this podcast, which she definitely doesn't, she'll be very jealous that you guys went away for the weekend, because ours is much more low key than that. But let's jump into the news. Where are we starting, Ben?
So I think the first thing to start with probably is going to be a story on Facebook and their video stat reporting. So we talked last podcast, which I think was 2 weeks ago, about the year in review from Stream Hatchet and comparing Twitch to Facebook to YouTube on just the viewership and the growth over the past couple of years. So something that came out in our discussions, I think in our own kind of group, is that Facebook has been inflating sort of their video stats. And this is something we've talked about, I think, on past podcasts to an extent, but there's actually some documentation here sort of on how they're actually counting views on Facebook. I believe there was an article put out by someone that you kind of follow, Pete. Is that right?
Yeah. Hank Green, who has been a creator on YouTube, probably. He's probably like one of the OGs. Like, he's been around since the very beginning. But he always covers kind of like the platform side and what it's like to be a creator. And I think he runs a business that helps creators as well, certainly with YouTube. And he's been pretty vocal about how Facebook counts views, like you said, not specifically to do with live streams, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's exactly the same, but actually to do with video counts. And I was following this sort of Twitter thread from earlier in February, and he linked to a blog post that he did on Medium, which was actually from, I think, 2015 or something. Yeah, 2015, where it's talking about how Facebook was basically counting views and inflating their stats effectively to make the platform seem like a really great alternative to YouTube. And then a lot of businesses moved over and haven't seen the results that they were hoping. But it all really comes down to where they count the view from. And they basically count a view in the first 3 seconds. Whereas I think on YouTube, it's 30 seconds on. 30
yeah,
seconds
about
in
30
that
seconds.
A view counts. And obviously YouTube's whole platform now is built around watch time and how long people stay watching a video for. So yeah, it's pretty shady. And it would be nice if places like Stream Hatchet, which we obviously were looking at the report in the last podcast, took things like that into account. But I don't really know how they could, because they don't have access to the same levels of data as you know, Facebook do.
Yeah, I think it's also just how Facebook does the reporting on that kind of stuff, because if they're accessing APIs to get that info, that's probably just how Facebook puts out view count info. So there's not a whole lot Stream Hatchet and those other scraping services can do. But that was super interesting, the fact that it's a 3 second count for a view on Facebook versus 30 seconds on YouTube. So that's like a 10x difference, right, in that view count. And also you have to think about the way that videos get shown on Facebook versus YouTube, because they're like in a news feed and you might see one autoplay versus on YouTube where you really have to click into a video to start watching it. So it's tough to compare those two to each other a lot of times. The other thing that I thought was really interesting about that article was he talked about on YouTube, there's a big issue with people stealing YouTube content and re-uploading it on there. Because if you just take like a YouTube link and put that on Facebook, Facebook's not going to promote it because they want to keep you on Facebook, right? But if you take the same video and just upload it natively on Facebook, it does well. So because of that, a lot of people will take other people's videos and upload them as their own. And then the YouTubers can't really do anything about that because copyright is not the best system for control for this kind of thing on Facebook. So that's just interesting because I don't spend a lot of time on Facebook myself, but I could see why it'd be a big problem if you have maybe, Pete, even some of your videos are on over on Facebook. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you say that because I've never checked. YouTube has like a handy way of being able to see where they've detected that your content has been re-uploaded because they have the whole content ID system and they scan basically every video that goes up to see if it's got any copyright material in, but they also scan it to see if it's a re-upload of something that's already existing on YouTube. So as a creator on YouTube, you get to see what has been uploaded that YouTube thinks contains your content. And sometimes that's useful. Like sometimes it's just people streaming and like watching one of my videos, which is fine. But sometimes it's literally like somebody has re-uploaded my video and is trying to build a channel from re-uploading videos. And obviously that's not fine. But I've never looked on Facebook. It would not surprise me if somebody had made like the Gaming Critics Facebook page and was just uploading my videos there and profiting and me not seeing any of it and all the audience thinking it is my channel. I should probably check that out. I'll write that down on my little to-do list here to look at afterwards. But yeah, I think overall this article, even though it's 7 years old now, is that right? 2015 was 7 years ago.
Wow. Yep.
It's definitely worth the read, and I've linked the Twitter thread of Hank Green anyway, the more recent one, in the chat if you guys want to check it out. But useful to read and stay in touch with what's happening. And another plug I'll give actually is he recently was on the Marcus Brownlee MKBHD podcast talking about the TikTok side of things and how TikTok's creator fund or whatever they call it, the $2 billion that they are giving out every year isn't a sustainable model because it's worse for the creator as the platform grows because the money stays the same. So you're getting paid less for each 1,000 views or something. It's a really good podcast. He knows his stuff and he's really interesting to listen to. So if I remember, I'll put that into the show notes as well. But I don't have a link handy for that. Let's move on though and talk about what's our next topic. Oh, the Stream Hatchet graphic that they sort of shared where they're looking at people that have moved from Twitch to YouTube and the differences in their average concurrent viewership. So actually the first graph that they shared was looking at peak viewership, which isn't that useful. And somebody pointed out, I'd love to see the visuals of how this changes if we saw average concurrent viewership instead of the peak. And this is really interesting. Like if I was more of a data nerd, I would have collected this myself, but thankfully we've got Stream Hatchet to do it for us. But we see the growth or the decline of a lot of people moving from Twitch to YouTube. So for audio listeners, I'll do my best to describe it. Ludwig, moving from Twitch to YouTube, saw a 78% growth in average CCV. Tim the Tapman, 23% average growth. Dr. Lupo, 44% decline. Valkyrie, 841% growth. I don't really know if I believe that she had 2,000 concurrent viewers when she was on Twitch. I thought she was bigger than that because she'd already signed for 100 Thieves at that point. But anyway, I won't dive into the individuals. Courage basically stayed the same. And Pokimane, they put on there as well because she has just announced that she's staying on Twitch. So she is basically Twitch to Twitch, has seen a 1% growth. So on average, there is a pretty big jump here, Ben, going from Twitch to YouTube. And this isn't just like for one or two streamers. Obviously, we've got to talk about Dr. Lupo's opposite side of the spectrum. But for Ludwig, Tim the Tapman, Valkyrie, and Courage kind of stayed the same. That's a pretty big jump of moving platforms. I'm surprised by that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I think, again, the first tweet went out was showing like all-time peak viewership, which doesn't really tell a good story because you look at like Tim and Ludwig who had these big moments on Twitch and just they've only been there for what, 2 or 5 months on YouTube. So obviously they're not going to have that huge moment on YouTube yet, probably. But in terms of average viewership, it's crazy to see, especially Ludwig and Tim have both grown. Like Ludwig's viewership has almost doubled essentially over on YouTube, which is super interesting because I know he was super concerned about like how it would translate. Same for Tim. He's up about 5,000 viewers overall. So I think those are the two biggest. Valkyrie obviously has been there for like 2 years now. And I think people know her probably more for YouTube at this point than Twitch. Whereas Ludwig and Tim are still kind of moving over from Twitch to a degree. So I think that makes sense why she's gotten so much bigger. She's also been kind of like the poster child, I think, for YouTube gaming. So there's been a lot of promotion there. But I mean, this is a great trend. Like if you're moving to YouTube, we'll have to see kind of how this plays out in the next year, right? With Tim and Ludwig and Lupo. but I think it's a good sign so far. And it just, I always forget like how much viewership there is on YouTube. Cause I still predominantly watch on Twitch for now, although we'll talk about some things later in this podcast that might change that. But yeah, it's crazy to see just how big YouTube is growing with these big acquisitions they made the last couple months.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it's been as big as it has. Like, especially Ludwig, he was just such a big streamer on Twitch and is clearly now averaging 20,000 concurrents on YouTube. Concurrents. I can't say that word today. It's late here in the UK. But yeah, I'd love to see Stream Hatchet produce more of these graphics and, you know, not just maybe look at the viewership, but also look at chat interaction, you know, other metrics that we can use to determine if it has really been a successful move. But I think all of these streamers were probably willing to actually take a dip in viewership for the better contract that YouTube offers in terms of less stream hours that they have to stream, you know, the production quality that they're allowed to push into videos rather than live streams. And, you know, a lot of them talked about the money being like a big factor. So the actual contract itself. So I think a lot of them will be chuffed is probably a very British word. I've just realized that, but pleased to see a jump in viewership. Like we mentioned just in that segment, Pokimane announced that she is staying on Twitch. I can't say I'm particularly surprised, but would I have been that surprised if she announced she was going to YouTube? Probably not. She did something nice rather than like doing a video, spending a lot of money with saying where she was going to stream. She's decided to put that towards a car that she's giving away to one of her viewers. So good choice. She clearly knew she'd get a lot of Twitter engagement from that.
Pretty smart.
And you've also got some data here about the launch of Lost Ark. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so I think we were talking maybe last podcast about trying to predict what the next big game on Twitch would be, right? Or the big game of the year. And obviously, if you guys have been on Twitch recently, and maybe YouTube, I'm not sure, Lost Ark has been huge on Twitch lately. I think because it's a brand new game, free to play, and it also has the drop system on Twitch. So drops always inflate viewership quite a bit. But combined with that, we also had Asmongold come back after a while of not streaming, with all that, like a perfect storm sort of just Lost Ark dominating on Twitch. And then Stream Hatchet did this really cool breakdown between Lost Ark and New World, actually showing kind of the trail off of viewership over the first week or so after launch. And Lost Ark is outperforming New World pretty heavily, I'd say, and kind of like sustaining it. You'll see like New World dropped off pretty quickly if you look at the between day one and seven, whereas it looks like the drop for Lost Ark's a little bit slower. And it also had like a couple more spikes where it was dropping and then came back up, whereas Lost Ark was pretty consistently down throughout the whole week. So it's super interesting. I haven't played much Lost Ark, but it's always cool to see a new game kind of take over Twitch, and there's a whole new hype factor to it. I'm curious how long this will last, Pete, but it's cool just to follow the kind of the streaming meta for games and to see what the next big game will be.
I am muted. Yeah, I was taking a drink of water. I was saying that I'm not a big MMO gamer. I don't know if you are, but I haven't really seen many streams going out about this other than the Asmongold ones that you linked. So is the big spikes related to when he streams, do you think, or was it a quick patch or something like that? Or
yeah, I think if you look at this chart, day four, I believe, was I think Asmon's biggest day, where he got like 426,000 concurrent viewers or something. Wow. Which is crazy. And I'm sure that's in one of the records for sure for the year, but maybe just on Twitch overall. And I think it's also to do with the drop system. I don't follow Lost Ark super closely, so I imagine that they're just doing new drops or new sort of in-game moments that are doing that. But definitely Asmongold is carrying that category. If you look at the overall streams on Twitch there, he's over it by a landslide there.
Yeah, well, two really interesting charts. Yeah, like you said, the first one where you're looking at just the most watched Twitch channels, he's just dominating. I'd love to see, again, if YouTube is anywhere in there, if anyone's streaming that on YouTube. And again, we'll link all of these in the description. But these are good Twitter accounts to follow if you enjoy these kind of stat things. Okay, let's move on to new stream gear that came out this week. And I have to upfront say that I haven't tried either of these yet. But there are some reviews out there early if you are interested in any of them. Elgato announced another light. I think the fourth light that they've announced now, because they've had the Key Light Air, the ring light. That's not called the key ring, is it? It's called the ring light, I think. And now the key light mini, which is essentially a mini version of the key light, but it's battery powered. It's got an included battery, I should say. So you don't need to be plugged into anything. Still integrates with all of the Stream Deck side of things. So it's controllable from a Stream Deck or from Stream Deck Mobile, the app. And I think you can change the brightness and the color temperature, similar to the key light. And I think it's magnetic as well. So it's more looking at the sort of vlog style camera setups, like out and about, or if you need a light that you need to move around to different streaming setups. So pretty interesting. Obviously, it's a smaller footprint than the key light and the key light air, which is a good thing, but also a bad thing when it comes to light, because you want nice big light sources to create a even spill across your face. But we saw Logitech and release like a very similar product, didn't they? I think it's even smaller than this earlier in the year. So I imagine Elgato's been working on this for a long time, but there's clearly a market for people that need this. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, this one was interesting because it's just sort of like a different audience, I feel like they're marketing to, because it's not really built for streamers, where a lot of Elgato gear is really designed for streaming, right? You can use this for streaming, and they have, I think, some examples of putting it on their stands and things for streaming. But they're really marketing it more towards like the vlogger, like you mentioned, and on the go kind of stuff, which is interesting. I do see like the value of having that. I have a feeling that you could probably find a cheaper version of the same thing more easily in this product category than the rest of Elgato's portfolio. But if you like to sync it with everything else that Elgato has, I guess it's nice. I think it could be cool if maybe you do a lot of like mobile streaming, or you move around a lot. You're not just at your desk all the time. Like if you have a desk, you're doing product reviews or something that where you want to have dynamic light sources, that could be pretty cool. And yeah, if you're mobile a lot, I think there's some value here, but it seems like you'd never use that over just like regular key light or even a key light air if you're just streaming for the most part.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's aimed at a different market, isn't it? Because it's not even that much cheaper than the key light air, I don't think. So if you're streaming from a standard setup, there's so many lights available now, like outside of Elgato's. But the nice thing with Elgato is the whole ecosystem. I feel like I'm talking about Apple here, but Apple and Elgato, I feel like, have the same kind of hold on their markets, where once you're in the ecosystem, you kind of want to keep buying their products because it all works together. And this, like, I understand the thought of being out and about and needing a light on top of your camera, and this seems like a good solution for that. But like you said, there's probably plenty of alternatives. But then you're not going to have your Stream Deck with you. It's not like you're going to be, I don't know, walking around with a USB cable and a laptop in your bag just so that you can use a Stream Deck. So I think this is more for, yeah, like streamers that want to move around their house and maybe have like a few different setups and don't want to invest in lights for every setup. And the fact that it's like magnetic could be super useful, I think. I'd be keen to see what people say in the chat about these kind of lights. I mean, the classic with Elgato products is that you can get cheaper alternatives, which you probably can when it comes to this product. But for a lot of them, there's a lot of features that cheaper alternatives don't have. Whilst we're waiting for people to speak about the Key Light Mini, let's go on to the second product, which is the VO7U. Great name for a microphone. A new microphone from Deity. Now, a lot of people probably haven't heard of Deity, but they're a pretty well-known audio company. They make a lot of shotgun microphones and lavalier microphones. They've certainly been in the content creator space for quite a while, similar to Rode. And this is their first attempt at a podcast/streamer microphone. I have been sent one of these, but it hasn't arrived yet. I don't know if that's been delayed because of the storms that we've had in the UK, or probably more likely, I was just slow to reply to the email. But I'll definitely get some time with the microphone. It retails at $170, and it's a USB dynamic microphone, which are becoming more and more popular, which is great, because a lot of podcasters like the whole dynamic side of microphones for noise rejection and for that sort of podcast style voice. And USB is obviously super convenient, not needing a mixer or any expensive hardware. But there are a couple of reviews out already, I think, about this. I know Adam Epos Fox has posted one, and Knackers as well, another YouTube or another channel that does sort of streamer education. And both of them had some issues with the gain. So I'll be keen to get my hands on one and test that out for myself and see if it's a early release problem that maybe mine doesn't suffer from. But yeah, really interested to see how the microphone performs. $170 though, it's not a cheap offering. And, you know, it comes into, I guess there's not that much choice when it comes to broadcast dynamic microphones that are USB, but at the same time, there's a lot of offerings in the USB market for condenser microphones, and you can get like the Wave 1 for $100, if not cheaper, when it's on sale. So it remains to be seen how, you know, how well it does in the market. Have you listened to any of those reviews or any audio samples yet, Ben?
Yeah, I saw one review that had this compared to the Beacon and Razer and a couple of other mics, and it was pretty good overall. I think I was actually surprised by the out-of-the-box sound for this one. So I haven't tried this one. I'm not probably going to, but it seems pretty good for compared to the other options you have out there. I think it's funny how this came out like right after the Beacon mic, because it looks a lot like the Beacon mic. It's got the RGB ring. It's kind of got the same, almost like SM7B inspired design. Same kind of like, you know, same idea. That's like a higher end USB mic to an extent. Now I think the Beacon is what, like 280 or something. And this one's 170. So it's a pretty big price difference between those two. But you also don't get the software with the Beacon mic.
Yeah, and that's a big part of the yeah. experience, I think, for the Beacon mic. Callie Wally from chat says, to be honest, I would rather have the Beacon mic. So clearly agreeing with you. But it is a big price jump. You know, it's not something that you can just, like, not everybody can warrant spending an extra $100 just to get good software. But I think that maybe what I'm going to experience with this microphone is that it's not worth the $70 over the Elgato Wave, which maybe, yes, it's a condenser microphone. So if you have, you know, a noisy environment or a lot of reverberation in your room, it's not great. But then you do get all of the software, and the software is what is setting these mics apart from microphone companies that have been out for ages. That's what the Elgato Wave did. It's what the Beacon mic's done. It's what the Rode NT USB microphones have done. The software and being able to manage all the different audio channels for your stream and submixes and things like that, that's what sets it apart. So this could be a popular microphone, but the fact that it's plug and play maybe appeals to a different audience, and I think it might be out of budget for some streamers that maybe need the features that come with the software on these other mics. But we'll save it for a proper review. I'll probably try it on the podcast at some point, so you guys can have a whole hour of listening to it to see if it's the kind of microphone for you or not. The last thing that we didn't put in our notes but was kindly pointed out to us in chat in terms of new streaming gear, and it's software, not really gear. So we're jumping straight into this, but OBS did release an update to version 27.2. I think right now there's still some very small issue affecting a few users. So I think that the advice probably is still to stick on 27.1.3, which was the latest version. 27.2 has a whole bunch of new features, and I'll probably do a dedicated video on it. But I've seen on their Twitter anyway that there are reports of some users with NVIDIA graphics cards, I think, that are having some crash reports or something like that. So yes, we will be covering this in more detail, I guess, once it's officially out and bug-free. But we can move on to the next section now, which I think is going to be Twitch updates. Ben, do you want to start with Zach's tweet?
Sure. Yeah. So there's, I think, like three main updates to talk about for Twitch this week. The first one is going to be there is a test right now going on to change up or add more options to the whole subscriber only VODs and streams concept, which is kind of controversial when that first came out. I remember when subscriber streams were first a thing. So now it seems that Twitch is testing out moderator and VIP exclusive streams / VODs. So this would be, you can only access the stream if you're a VIP or a mod, or you can only look at past broadcasts if you're a VIP or mod, which is interesting. I think the benefit of this is that it's not like a paid feature, right? So it's not like you have to pay to get access to these. These are kind of like loyalty things, which feels a little better, I'd say. But I don't know. It seems like it's a beta, and they're not really clear on how it's going to roll out, how widespread it's going to be, if it's just a test and it'll go away. So it's kind of early to place judgment on it, I'd say. Overall, I think the option's kind of cool. Like if you just want to do a mod stream, maybe, but then like, why not just use Discord? Something I like go to, unless you have like, I don't know, 20, 30 mods or something. VIP is cool though. Like if you could do like VIP only streams and have some way for people to get VIP. I could see some use there. They're also just so small, though. It seems kind of hard to bake into like a regular content schedule. And again, I would just default to going to Discord or something instead versus just doing like a small stream on Twitch. But I don't know. Pete, you have thoughts on seeing this come through?
I think this is to compete with Patreon. Like, it's as simple as that. I think they're trying to have some kind of exclusivity to people that are subscribed at tier 3 and 2. We've known for a while that people don't tend to really use the tier 2 and tier 3 subscriptions. There's like only a handful of benefits, and it's really just more seen as like giving more money to the streamer rather than like doing it for a certain reason. So to me, this just seems like trying to paywall certain features or like certain streams, which, or certain videos even, which is something that Patreon has been used for in the past. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just don't see it being that popular. Maybe some streamers like will really think of a way of structuring their community so that certain streams happen for certain supporters on certain days. But I just don't think that this is going to really affect much of the platform, if I'm being completely honest. Also, just whilst we're still in chat, I wanted to point out Exeldro, who is obviously one of the OBS developers, makes plenty of good plugins, has pointed out that 27.2.1 should be out very shortly, which is going to hopefully address all of those crashes. So we should be covering it very shortly on the channel, I'd imagine. But yeah, I don't know if this is going to be too big of a feature, but we'll have to wait and see, I think, Ben. But we've got some more updates. There's the new username policy that came out from Twitch, which basically was looking at making some new rules around what is and isn't allowed in usernames. And this is going to be applied retrospectively. So retrospectively or retroactively, I don't know which is the right word. As I've said, it's late in the UK. But basically usernames that are, that contain certain phrases, certain words, or seem to be hateful, they're going to be under more scrutiny, basically, Ben.
Yeah, I think this is interesting. Obviously, it's going to be good to an extent to have. I've seen people who've got like really obscene usernames already changed as of this. I've also seen people who have very not really infringing usernames get smacked all of a sudden for this, like partners even who've been partnered for years have an issue with this. So it seems like maybe they're kind of like overcompensating with some of the changes that are coming through to force new usernames. But ultimately, I don't know. It seems like it's probably a good idea just to avoid, like, we've all seen some names in chat that have been like, how did that get through Twitch, right? How is that approved to be on the platform? So I think seeing some of those things go away is probably good, as long as it's not like too far in the other direction where it's super restrictive on the kind of things you can put in there. They have like very specific guidelines here on the things that they will not allow on the usernames now, which is like references to sexual acts and references to hard drugs. So that seems pretty straightforward. Overall, I'm for this change, I think, just to keep some of the questionable things out of there. I did see there was one streamer who like had to rebrand his entire channel because his name was like Doenel, and it came off as like a sexual act, sort of. It's weird spelling. So if you're one of those people who got hit by this, hopefully it's not too much of a pain for you. But overall, I see kind of why Twitch would want to do this.
And what actually happens if like, are you just getting a notification and you can't stream again until you change your username? Or does it randomly generate you a new username? What happens?
Exactly. Yeah. So this guy, he got banned actually, which he was very confused about why, because it was just very sudden that they made this change. And after like, I think a week or so, they forcefully changed his name to just, it was Doenel. They changed it to Do Bleed Purple. So they just replaced it with like a Twitch phrase, essentially, which is kind of funny. And I think he kept it for now. So we'll see if he changes it. But I'm curious how many Bleed Purple usernames we'll see in the chat now.
Yeah, everyone's going to have like numbers after their names, basically. It's just going to be a randomly generated username. Okay, interesting. Well, thanks for following that more closely than I did. Last Twitch update, I think, is all to do with Moments. I think this is pretty cool, actually, Ben. I'll bring up the screen share here. So essentially, a new feature, and I think this is starting to roll out to selected partners and affiliates, maybe US only first. Sometimes that's how Twitch works. Mm-hmm. But this is essentially clips, but you get rewarded as a viewer if you were there when it was originally created. So if you were there on the live stream as a clip happened, the streamer can save that as a moment, and I think they can generate up to 5 a month or something like that. Yeah, I've seen that somewhere. 5 moments per month to give to their viewers. And there's some screenshots of how this looks for the dashboard. But essentially, you're giving this just seems like it's going towards like NFTs, doesn't it? But you're giving your viewers the ability to like have a badge because they were there when a certain moment happened. So this is just going to create FOMO, and like for these people that are diehard fans of Twitch streamers that watch every single minute, they want to have all 5 badges every single month to prove how keen they are of a viewer. But so, I think this has some like cool unique cases. But Ben, I'd be keen to hear what you think. Maybe you're the opposite.
Yeah, so I had to dive into this a little bit because it was a little confusing how it works. Initially, they have this article is pretty long. Thankfully, it goes into a lot of detail. The idea is basically you create a clip, and then that clip becomes a moment in this new category. And as a viewer, you can collect moments over time. So you can up to 5 a month on a channel, and only 5, and they don't roll over. So like if you as a streamer don't create 5 moments, then you don't, you know, get 6 the next month. You always get 5 a month if you have this feature. And the way that it works for viewers is you get an evolving badge. So it's not like you get a unique badge for each new moment that's created, which is what I thought originally. It's like once you get 5 moments collected, your badge levels up. And then after 10 and 15, you can see there's a whole diagram there on the article that maps it out. I think that's interesting. I was kind of hoping it was more of like the unique one, but maybe that's also more work to go create badges for, you know, hundreds of unique moments. I think it's a cool feature. I saw some people kind of memeing that this was just like another clip system that's no different when it came out. But I think it's cool to have these kind of special bits that you can reward people for just being part of the stream and still have like a cool evolving badge. Because Twitch doesn't really have a lot of badges besides stuff you pay for at the moment. So it's kind of cool to see this being something that you can just earn by being in a stream over time and kind of show off the loyalty for being in those places. So I'm excited for it personally.
Yeah, I don't hate it. You know, it can seem a little bit gimmicky, but like I've just looked now, tier 20, 275 moments earned. So who's going to
do that?
If you can only earn 5 per month, exactly, you've got to be a long-term viewer to be hitting tier 20. But I think this is cool. It's kind of a harmless feature. People will be upset that Twitch aren't solving bigger issues, but like we've said many times on the stream, different engineers are working on different features. So like, the people building this have probably been building it for a good few months, and they're not going to get taken off that to fix DMCA or something like that. Some opinions here in chat. Indie Game says another feature Twitch won't let you actually browse. So once you've had your moments, are you actually going to be able to go and find all the moments that you that you've been above? Surely
you can. So a couple of things about the mechanics of doing this, which I also looked into. So you can create a moment during a stream as a streamer, or your mods can do it too. And it's just like an action button in your dashboard or a chat command. And once you create the moment, as a viewer, you have to claim it within 3 minutes of it triggering. So it's not like you can come anytime during the stream and claim it. It's like a very short window that you have to grab it, which is kind of interesting.
You can't be lurking.
Once you've, yeah, exactly. You have to be pretty active to grab it, which is kind of cool, I guess, to reward engagement. And then after you've created the clip / moment as a streamer mod, you can edit the duration or like the end and start point of it for 24 hours after you've made it, but then it's locked in. So kind of interesting, just little things about it. I was thinking this is something you could go create like after a stream and then make it a moment or something and give it out to people who were there. But no, this is very much you have to be there, manually trigger it as the streamer, and they have to claim it. So it's going to be a very manual process when it first comes out, I think.
Yeah, you're going to need to have some active mods helping you like create the right clip. I guess you're probably not going to be anal about making sure that the in and out points are exactly as you want it. It's not like it is an NFT, but it's, I guess, yeah, it's just an evolution of clips really, isn't it? I wonder if it's going to make clips redundant because people will be like, oh, you weren't even watching that stream because you don't have the moment badge for it. So you're clearly not, you know, a pure Amaranth fan like I am, but we'll see. Pretty nice new feature. I think, is that it for Twitch features? Have we got one more? Yeah, that's it for Twitch features. So we're just going to go on to the YouTube stuff, which I think is even more exciting than that. So do you want to start with the first one of those, the co-streaming, I think it is?
Yes. So YouTube has announced that they are going to be working on collaborative live streams in 2022, which in the picture that I saw was like a side-by-side of two streamers essentially just in the same view, which is kind of like TikTok and a lot of these places that'll have like the, I don't use these platforms, but you know, when you can like a Cameo or the two people kind of doing the same thing at the same time. I think it's trying to replicate those platforms that have done this for a while. Like Twitch doesn't have this feature right now. It's also kind of almost like video conferencing to an extent, but just making it really easy to do in one stream, I guess, where it just kind of takes care of the joining a room for you and making the stream. So this is kind of interesting. It is different than Twitch. Like I think this is really targeted more at IRL streams and just like conversation streams versus playing a game together or that kind of thing. It looks very minimal. But I know it's very popular on platforms like TikTok and Instagram and that kind of stuff. So I could see it working well on YouTube if it's super easy for new streamers as well.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, if I swap to this scene, it's this, but we would both be streaming. It would like be linked between our two accounts. So if you were streaming on yours, you'd also have this view and I'd have this view. It's like you said, it's very similar to what you see on Instagram. When somebody goes live with somebody else, it like tags, it sends a notification out to all the people that follow those two accounts. And so you can see them have a conversation. And I'd be interested to know if they're going to, you know, go the next step and you're going to be able to invite people from chat onto the show, those kind of things. But yeah, there's definitely a market for this. Maybe it's not the same as the market that the Gaming Careers audience is, which is usually more higher production live streams than just like two cameras and talking. But there's certainly going to be a market for this, and YouTube will have done their research and seen how popular this is on Instagram. You said maybe you can do it on TikTok. I don't really browse TikTok that much, so this is probably a feature that you can do there as well. But there's certainly a demand for it from users. So it'll be interesting to see. It's basically like a collaboration, but it's kind of linked between the two accounts, which is really nice. So it could be really natural because it would promote to both accounts this new audience, wouldn't it? So
I think it makes it super easy too. So if you're not very experienced streamers streaming, like you said, with this audience maybe not being that category, but you want to do a collaboration, like I feel like I mostly see this between like sometimes celebrities and people just want to have a really quick go live button for this kind of thing, then that seems like what this is kind of made for. So I think this will work pretty well on YouTube. It also, sometimes the weird thing about streaming is sometimes like the lower production stuff, it works well because it's more like authentic. So maybe just like the simplicity of two cameras and that's it will work pretty well. And maybe that's why it works well on Instagram and TikTok.
Got a message here from Nomad who says collabs are probably the best way Twitch streamers get exposure. It'd be nice to have built-in features for that. So yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's something I've not done enough on the Gaming Careers YouTube channel is collaborate. And you see it all the time with it being a big reason as to why streamers and content creators gain a whole new audience if they're exposed to a new audience. So something I want to do more of, obviously, this podcast, I get to collaborate with Ben every week, which makes me very happy. But that's not the only feature we've got. There is also, I think this is the more exciting one, and I'll bring up the screen share here because this is a tweet from Neil Mohan, who is the chief product officer at YouTube. So very, very high up, you know, you've got chief in the name, you know, they're one of the goats, who has basically teased a feature which I think has gone out to 5% of users, and it might only be on Android because, you know, obviously Google, who owns YouTube, wants to promote Android as much as possible. So I don't know if it's yet there on iOS. What'd be really interesting is if the audience here today, the people watching, could check on their phones to see if this is happening for them on this live stream. But essentially, when you're browsing YouTube and you see the avatar of the creator that you're watching a VOD of, if they are live, they will now have this red ring around and the live badge below it. And also maybe a little pop-up to say that this streamer is, or this creator is live right now, and you can just tap one button to watch them live. So this is the first time that we've really seen YouTube try and push live streams to VOD creators. And this is the reason that I've always done this live stream on this channel, because I know that at some point YouTube is going to start pushing videos out to, live streams out to the subscribers and the people watching the videos of that creator. So I'd be really interested to know on chat if it's available, if people are seeing it on iPhone, on Android, where in the world you're seeing it from, to see if it's being rolled out. We've already got one, yeah. So I got this name wrong earlier. Gamiax. Indie Gamiax says, yep, it's on my iPhone. So it's not just Android. I take it back. So yeah, seeing it on on iPhone as well. And I'd be interested to know, is that for this channel? Because that is a really, really cool feature. You're going to get, like, for channels like mine, I have a huge library of videos that people are browsing the whole time. And then for 1 hour a week, when we do this live stream, people are going to see a little live badge and hopefully come and watch the podcast live, which I think is great. And then we got another one on Android. I can see it, and I'm from India. So this is appearing. Maybe it's been rolled out to more, maybe it's being rolled out to certain channels rather than certain viewers. So like certain channels will have it enabled on theirs. But I've spoken for a while about how much I love this, Ben. Can you poke any holes in why you hate this feature?
I can't stand it. I hate discoverability on YouTube. No, this is really cool. I think this is one of the features that people have asked for the longest on live, because it's such an obvious thing. And it's very much like what you see on Instagram with that kind of outline sometimes. It's huge though for YouTube, because you think about how often that, first of all, mobile alone, it's only on mobile right now, which is kind of sad, but also mobile is a huge audience on YouTube. So that's and it's both on Android and iOS, seems like, from the chat today. So that's a huge audience that's seeing that you are live while that video shows up. Now, obviously, you have to make videos for this to really be useful, I think. But I think the fact that you could make a video and then put it out and then go live right after, which is something people are already doing on YouTube. Now you'll have the actual live button showing, like, as your new upload comes out, people just click that and go watch you live instantly. That's going to be huge, I think. Not to mention the fact that you're just browsing the back catalog, like you said, of stuff that's just always getting views on YouTube. That's also going to show that you're live. This is like the first really big feature I've seen from YouTube for discoverability. Now, it's a really small feature, right? All I did was put a ring around your profile picture at the end of the day. But like the impact of what this means for how much you can drive traffic to your channel now from just creating videos is huge, I think. So this is really exciting. And I think this is like the most compelling thing I've seen from YouTube in a while on why you might go to YouTube instead of Twitch, honestly.
I mean, I think this it's funny that you say it's a small feature, because it is. It's a tiny feature. At the end of the day, it's a bit of color around a profile picture. Like, it's probably not even the hardest feature for an engineer to implement. But it makes so much sense. And I think a lot of people were expecting this to happen at some point for YouTube. But now that argument that a lot of creators like myself say about, if you want to grow on Twitch, you need to have an audience on another platform and bring it across. And YouTube is so great at serving up really relatable, good quality content, even if you don't have a big subscriber base. And now this is going to accelerate people's live streams on the platform as well, because, you know, create good content that people end up watching in VOD format and then live stream on that same account. And they're going to push people to your live stream just purely by showing them that you're live. So, yeah, I think two big thumbs up from me on this. I wouldn't be surprised if features like this are the reason that smaller streamers certainly start to move over to YouTube.
Yeah, I think it's just a massive thing, right? Because you don't have anything like this on Twitch right now. And it seems like it's still rolling out. So like Celdre was saying that he's not seeing it on Android yet. So maybe it's like an update that's coming out. Obviously, it's not on desktop either, which would be really nice, because that's probably the way I browse a lot of YouTube myself. But like small steps, and mobile is huge. I mean, I still think that's the majority of people watching YouTube. So if this rolls out to all platforms and countries and everything else, then this could be a huge difference maker. And I would definitely make more videos and maybe look at doing YouTube streaming after looking at this, because I don't know, I get excited by having more ways to actually get seen, because I've just been on Twitch for so long at this point. I assume that's the only way you can do it.
Yeah, and so many people have had that as the pain point of Twitch, like the discoverability. It's difficult. And the fact that the advice that creators like myself give is to build an audience on another platform to then bring across to Twitch, that I mean, it makes sense, but it doesn't make sense from Twitch's point of view. Like Twitch doesn't want that to be the answer of how a new streamer becomes popular on Twitch. They don't want to promote other services to then bring an audience across. But YouTube has that problem solved, because they already have, what is it, 2 billion visits a day or something like that. It's just absolutely nuts. They already have the traffic, and now it's just about linking up the VOD and the live side of things. And this tiny little feature of a red ring around somebody's name when they're live, I think is going to be huge. And it excites me that even though Ryan has left, they're clearly going to be still pushing forward with all the YouTube side of things, all the things that they promised in that roadmap.
Exactly. That was my big concern when he left, because he was kind of again, the poster child and the face of YouTube, talking about we're doing all this discoverability and we're going to add new features and gifted subs. And then when he left, there was a lot of concern of, well, is that still going to happen? And Susan put out the letter saying that it was still going to happen, of course, but it's nice to see an actual feature come out. I think this is like the first feature we've seen for discoverability so far, right, Pete? And I hope there's more. Like, I hope this is just the first of more coming. But yeah, first I can remember in a long time that they're doing live discoverability on YouTube.
Yeah, we've definitely had an update where they pushed like live videos could appear in people's home and suggested. It just took up the same spot that like a video would. But if you've watched a lot of Gaming Careers videos and then you happen to be on the YouTube homepage when I'm live or when we're live, then it can be suggested. That was a feature, but I think that came out like 6 months ago, honestly. I don't really remember seeing an announcement by that, but we've seen a lot of comments in chat that they've arrived at this live stream from the homepage rather than, you know, knowing it was happening from Twitter or Instagram or somewhere else that we post it. So yeah, I think it's really exciting. There were some comments earlier on like, why is Tim the Tap Man in the thumbnail? I mean, partly clickbait, but also because he's got the red ring and the live word below him. Exactly the feature that we're talking about so much. What is this? An actual live stream in my suggested list? Well, there you go. A perfect example from ChrisCast. I think that's a TF2 creator back from the day. That's the game that I used to play many, many years ago at a high level. But yeah, really excited, Ben. I don't really have much more to say on it unless you do.
No, I mean, again, I hope that this is the first of more stuff to come. Because like you said, I mean, it is like a small actual feature on the page, but the implications are huge. I would still love to see an actual directory. I know that's kind of controversial on YouTube, and Fizz was talking about how he wanted to get away from a directory, but at least something else to browse them more easily, right? Because it's still tough to like go look for live streams in a category compared to Twitch. So that still seems like a big gap to me.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more I like agree and disagree with Fizz's point of view, because they want to be much bigger than just Twitch in terms of Twitch. It's primarily, if you go to the Twitch directory, it's primarily games, isn't it? You're browsing by game. I know that they have a few categories for just chatting and things like that, but YouTube is like the AI system. Everybody loves YouTube's recommendation. Like the amount of new channels I've discovered in the last year because of being recommended a video on home is crazy. So if they can apply that same logic to live streams as well, then I'm all for it. I've said many times on this podcast, I must be one of the very few creators that still browses their subscriptions tab on YouTube. Like that's what I do first thing every day, is I open up my subscriptions of all the people I subscribe to and I look at all the new videos. And, you know, I'm really nerding out about it because I'm thinking about which thumbnails and which titles I've clicked on. So I'm also applying it to like a learning perspective. But I know that the majority of people never go to the subscriptions tab. They just browse on home and they're all browsing on mobile. Like you said, like 60% of viewership's coming from mobile now. So anyway, we're learning a lot and we've talked a lot, but we should probably wrap this up because it's getting pretty late here in the UK. We're going to be back next week. That right, Ben? No plans next week. No more Valentine's Day trips away where you're spoiling your wife whilst I'm definitely not even buying chocolates or flowers or anything for mine, but
wow, Pete, jeez, letting it all here on the podcast, man. You gotta
she doesn't
careful.
Listen to it, so it's she has no idea that there's anything better out there
for now.
Exactly. So yeah, keep us tagged in all the news that you guys discover as you do every week. Anything that you want us to discuss, we'll definitely cover OBS update in more detail. As Exceldro said, the hot fix is probably coming out very soon. So yeah, really excited to get my hands and try that and update OBS that we use for this podcast every week. But yeah, keep tagging us in everything that you guys see, and we'll see you next week. Peace.
See ya.